A dispatch from Fubai in April 1972 said that 50 GIs out of 142 men in the company refused to go on patrol, crying, "This isn't our war." The New York Times on July 14, 1973, reported that American prisoners of war in Vietnam, ordered by officers in the POW camp to stop cooperating with the enemy, shouted back, "Who's the enemy?" They formed a peace committee in the camp, and a sergeant on the committee later recalled his march from capture to the POW camp. Until we first got to the camp, we didn't see a village intact. They were all destroyed. I sat down and put myself in the middle and asked myself, is this right or wrong? Is it right to destroy villages? Is it right to kill people en masse? After a while, it just got to me. Pentagon officials in Washington and Navy spokesmen in San Diego announced after the United States withdrew its troops from Vietnam in 1973 that the Navy was going to purge itself of undesirables, and that these included as many as 6,000 men in the Pacific Fleet, a substantial proportion of them black. Altogether, about 700,000 GIs had received less than honorable discharges. In the year 1973, one of every five discharges was less than honorable, indicating something less than dutiful obedience to the military. By 1971, 177 of every 1,000 American soldiers were listed as absent without leave, some of them three or four times. Deserters doubled from 47,000 in 1967 to 89,000 in 1971. One of those who stayed, fought, but then turned against the war was Ron Kovic. His father worked in a supermarket on Long Island. In 1963, at the age of 17, he enlisted in the Marines. 2 years later, in Vietnam, at the age of 19, his spine was shattered by shell fire. Paralyzed from the waist down, he was put in a wheelchair. Back in the States, he observed the brutal treatment of wounded veterans in the veterans' hospitals, thought more and more about the war, and joined the Vietnam Veterans Against the War. He went to demonstrations to speak against the war. One evening, he heard actor Donald Sutherland read from the post-World War I novel by Dalton Trumbo, Johnny Got His Gun, about a soldier whose limbs and face were shot away by gunfire, a thinking torso who invented a way of communicating with the outside world and then beat out a message so powerful it could not be heard without trembling. Sutherland began to read the passage, and something I will never forget swept over me. It was as if someone was speaking for everything I ever went through in the hospital. I began to shake, and I remember there were tears in my eyes. Kovic demonstrated against the war and was arrested. He tells his story in Born on the 4th of July. They help me back into the chair and take me to another part of the prison building to be booked. "What's your name?" the officer behind the desk says. "Ron Kovic," I say. "Occupation, Vietnam veteran against the war." "What?" he says sarcastically, looking down at me. "I'm a Vietnam veteran against the war," I almost shout back. "You should have died over there," he says. He turns to his assistant. "I'd like to take this guy and throw him off the roof." They fingerprint me and take my picture and put me in a cell. I've begun to wet my pants like a little baby. The tube has slipped out during my examination by the doctor. I try to fall asleep, but even though I am exhausted, the anger is alive in me like a huge hot stone in my chest. I lean my head up against the wall and listen to the toilets flush again and again. Kovic and the other veterans drove to Miami to the Republican National Convention in 1972, went into the convention hall, wheeled themselves down the aisles, and as Nixon began his acceptance speech, shouted, "Stop the bombing, stop the war." Delegates cursed them, traitor, and Secret Service men hustled them out of the hall. In the fall of 1973, with no victory in sight and North Vietnamese troops entrenched in various parts of the South, the United States agreed to accept a settlement that would withdraw American troops and leave the revolutionary troops where they were until a new elected government would be set up, including communist and non-communist elements. But the Saigon government refused to agree, and the United States decided to make one final attempt to bludgeon the North Vietnamese into submission. It sent waves of B-52s over Hanoi and Haiphong, destroying homes and hospitals, killing unknown numbers of civilians. The attack did not work. Many of the B-52s were shot down. There was angry protest all over the world, and Kissinger went back to Paris and signed very much the same peace agreement that had been agreed on before. The United States withdrew its forces, continuing to give aid to the Saigon government. But when the North Vietnamese launched attacks in early 1975 against the major cities in South Vietnam, the government collapsed. In late April 1975, North Vietnamese troops entered Saigon. The American embassy staff fled, along with many Vietnamese who feared communist rule, and the long war in Vietnam was over. Saigon was renamed Ho Chi Minh City, and both parts of Vietnam were unified as the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. Traditional history portrays the end of wars as coming from the initiatives of leaders' negotiations in Paris or Brussels or Geneva or Versailles, just as it often finds the coming of war a response to the demand of the people. The Vietnam War gave clear evidence that at least for that war, making one wonder about the others, the political leaders were the last to take steps to end the war. The people were far ahead. The president was always far behind. The Supreme Court silently turned away from cases challenging the constitutionality of the war. Congress was years behind public opinion. In the spring of 1971, syndicated columnists Roland Evans and Robert Novak, two firm supporters of the war, wrote regretfully of a sudden outbreak of anti-war emotionalism in the House of Representatives and said, "The anti-war animosities now suddenly so pervasive among House Democrats are viewed by administration backers as less anti-Nixon than as a response to constituent pressures." It was only after the intervention in Cambodia ended, and only after the nationwide campus uproar over that invasion, that Congress passed a resolution declaring that American troops should not be sent into Cambodia without its approval. And it was not until late 1973, when American troops had finally been removed from Vietnam, that Congress passed a bill limiting the power of the president to make war without congressional consent. Even there, in that War Powers Resolution, the president could make war for 60 days on his own without a congressional declaration. The administration tried to persuade the American people that the war was ending because of its decision to negotiate a peace, not because it was losing the war, not because of the powerful anti-war movement in the United States. But the government's own secret memoranda all through the war testify to its sensitivity at each stage about public opinion in the United States and abroad. The data is in the Pentagon Papers.